Bloody Muttley. Welcome to I don't know the episode number.
37, I think.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. Smooth.
Yeah. Welcome to episode 37 of Digital Outbox. Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of Digital Outbox. Joining me this evening, we have Chris.
Hello.
Shaquille.
Hi.
And Henry.
Hello. I don't have to look up, but everyone else is like kind of, oh, yeah,
Exactly. Lackluster.
The whole crew is here.
Indeed, the Fantastic Four.
The so solid crew. The posse.
How are we all? We all good?
Good to go.
Great.
Very good.
Ideal.
Yeah.
Let's crack on with the first story. Warner Music free streaming services are ending, Chris.
Well, it's a very new story, but Warner Music tonight have come out and said that the free streaming model is not good for their industry, and so they're going to stop doing it. So services like Spotify, Last.fm and all those, the models that are ad-supported, they don't believe are the future of the music industry, and therefore they will stop the licensing. Because it's only just broken, we don't know whether that means they will stop Spotify straight away or whether the licensing has got a period where it's going to run out or anything like that. But they want to go to a subscription-only model, and they think that's how they're going to make their money. And I just think they're absolutely barmy. They've just got a model which, you know, is good for everyone, and now they want to screw it all up. I mean, they hold bands like Arctic Monkeys, Red Hot Chili Peppers, Green Day. They hold quite a few REM on there as well. So that if they move their catalogs off of Spotify, obviously it reduces Spotify for a whole lot of people.
Mm.
Yeah, the effectiveness.
Very strange, because Universal, was it? I'm sure it was Universal just last week said that Spotify was on its way to proving its profitability.
Yeah, they said it was viable. So again, this is another person going against that, really, or another a difference of opinion.
Madness.
I just think they're mad. They see every single person listening to a piece of music as something they need to monetize, rather than analyzing whether that person actually thinks that bit of music's worth paying money for. I mean, someone might think it's worth listening to an advert for, or, you know, listen to the radio. I think that's what the equivalences of, aren't they? That, you know, you listen to something on the radio and that's supported by adverts quite often.
Do you think it's because music sales have been going down for a while now, and they're just trying to make as much money as they can any other way?
Is it clear though that music sales are going down? I don't think
according
all
to
these
them,
people are.
That's what they say. You know,
I think they're posting profits that are, you know, record profits. I think they see it more.
But it's back
like
to
they're losing out potential.
But is it not back to music sales are down, but they're making more money out of tours, concerts, you know, ticket sales, all that kind of stuff. So I think the profits are up in general, but I think sales are slightly down.
One thing I think of is a lot of people are like now downloading music. I'm talking about like legally here from iTunes. So surely some of their overheads will be less, you know, whereas before they had to print the CDs and distribute them.
His latest statement, in the same statement as saying, you know, that he doesn't want to do this free streaming model, he also says that he doesn't see downloads as being a good model either. Right. They don't get enough money out of that, according to him. I think they just see these big numbers of people listening to tracks, and they think, well, how can I get every single last penny out of every single person? But it's just not going to happen. They're mad if they don't think this is going to again just make people download it from somewhere then get it
from. Tied up to that was an article at the weekend saying that the sales had gone down for the higher priced iTunes tracks.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, are you surprised? Are you really that, you know, is it really that short sighted, you think, putting the price up? Especially when you can go onto Amazon and get it cheaper or elsewhere. No, it's no big surprise. Moving on, we have a few big Google stories. First was something I noticed through the week, Google Social Circle. If you have a Google profile and you're logged in and you do a Google search, at the bottom of the first page, you actually get the same search results, but looking at your social circle. And your social circle is basically on your profile. If you've linked to Twitter and blogs and Flickr and Tumblr, etc., Google then looks at the posts and the tweets that all your contacts and followers and people you're following have made, and then brings back results from them.
So it's just from their actual, say, website, say, from their blog or whatever?
From their blog or from what they're tweeting. So it's actually a nice way of almost filtering the content of people that you're interested in.
Yeah, do you need to be officially associated to someone? So can does it is it just your friends? Because quite frankly, I'm not interested in their opinions.
It's it's friends, and also it goes on to secondary contacts as well.
So there can be people that has one-way contacts, as in you said, I'm interested in them.
Well, basically, it's looking at your contacts, and then it also looks, you know, it does gives it a further level down when it goes and looks into their contacts, and then it tries to do a bit of...
Friends of friends.
Yeah.
And it see, brings, if we've only got 6 degrees of separation anyway, how far did they go? Because
exactly.
Otherwise, there's not much difference between that and the whole internet, is there?
No.
It's just but sorting it a bit differently.
But I thought it was an the only thing I would have liked was a way to actually, you know, and they've said it's beta, but see if I could have seen this alongside the search results at the top instead of having to scroll down all the time. Because most of the time you get the hit you're looking for straight away. So it's kind of lost and buried.
Mm.
Something that's not lost and buried was launched yesterday, Google Buzz. And I wonder
it was
which...
nearly lost and buried on me. It took me ages to get mine.
Bless.
I felt very left out in the cold.
Bless. So Google Buzz launched yesterday. It's built into Gmail. And I guess what they'd basically had is 5 key features. It'll auto-follow people you've emailed regularly. There's a rich, fast sharing experience. You can publicly and privately share. Inbox integration. And then the 5th key feature, just the good stuff. Which I don't quite understand why that's a key feature.
I think, let's take a step back on it, because I hadn't heard of Buzz until I read it in the thing. It's basically Google's a way of, I don't know, doing a social app, isn't it?
It is their take on social networking.
But instead of you friending people, it just takes the people that you've emailed.
Well, kind of. You can also, it hooks into your Google profile again, and people you follow in your profile or people you follow in Google Reader will automatically be followed in Buzz as well.
Okay. It's an emasculated status update thing. Is that right? Am I right in saying that where you can where you can type stuff, but you can also put images and videos in it?
It's more than that. Did you ever use FriendFeed?
No.
Ah. So if FriendFeed was almost like an aggregator, so in FriendFeed you could hook in all your sites and it would aggregate all the content. So you could hook in your blog, your Twitter stream, your Flickr photos, and it would pull them all in. And you could also follow people on FriendFeed, and people could comment on FriendFeed on that content. And you'd actually get lots of interesting conversations on FriendFeed. And I found that just by following a few key people, you could pick up in some real interesting conversations. And it's all, and when I'm saying interesting, it was all around the kind of tech community stuff. And
so
already with Buzz, it's almost, for me, it's almost very like FriendFeed.
So isn't that like kind of like a live stream that you'd put on your blog or whatever? Is it aggregates all of that?
It's a bit like that, but it's more so. So if I was following you in Google Reader, as soon as you shared a story in Google Reader, it appears in my Buzz.
Okay.
And it's instantaneous. I mean, it really is. As soon as you do it, it appears.
Do people, and this is my big question on this then, is do people use Gmail enough? Are they on that website enough to turn it into a social application? Or maybe this is the attempt to try and drag people to it more often?
I think that's a question, isn't it?
Well, it's funny. Me and Shaki were just talking about it yesterday, how we never use Gmail anymore. Well, sorry, that's not true. We use Gmail the service, but we don't use Gmail the website.
Yep.
So I use Mail on the Mac or on the iPhone to do my Gmailing.
Yeah, I use Google Apps instead, but obviously it's the same kind of process. But
yeah,
most of the time that's just synced via my iPhone or through my Outlook. Yeah, I do go on the site, but hardly ever.
And I'm the same. Usually I only go on just to make sure that, you know, is any spam being picked up? You know, that's, it shouldn't
that's the
be
only reason
up.
I go there is to if there's an email that I know I should have received and I think it's maybe gone in the spam folder.
Yeah,
that's the only reason I'd look at it. And it's not available for the Google Apps users.
No,
which is a real pain.
And I don't know if they're going to make that available.
They're making what they're calling a corporate version of it, so I assume that's going to be tied into the apps.
Yeah, okay.
But I mean, I guess this then is Google's response to people not visiting the website, because obviously that's where they get exposed to the adverts. So Google's response is to make the website more of a social experience to try and drag people back there and be exposed to those adverts.
Well, the other thing is, because I mean, Ian and myself use Gmail on the iPhones. If you browse to the google.com/buzz website from your iPhone, you could then save that bookmark onto your homepage, so it will appear like another app. So you still don't necessarily have to go to the website, but you can use Google Buzz, if you know what I mean.
And one of the things I've been really quite smart with Google Buzz, unlike maybe some of the other social networks that start up, it's fully open. It's already got APIs. It's supporting a whole lot of different methods of syndicating out to other services.
Yeah, I mean, you can add your Flickr account to it.
There's a whole lot of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, you can, and it's not just like, by default, you can easily do Twitter, your blog, Flickr, Picasa, and there's a couple others in there, but you can also basically add any third party website. So some people were starting to add in FriendFeed, and it was like, instantly, it's just loads of posts because it's just too much.
Oh, are we not getting a bit bored of all these social sites, or frustrated by having to endlessly friend the same people, or find their content in different places and do the same process?
And that's where it's frustrating, you know. So it's like, yet again, I'm having to start to follow people. And I was doing some of that in my Google profile anyway, because I was starting to find I liked some of the kind of tech people were sharing really good stories in Google Reader, and it was from sites I wasn't following. So you were still picking up that news. And fair enough, I know I'm a bit of a news geek when it comes to that sort of stuff, and I love reading all this stuff, but you know, that's not for everyone. I just find it's a nice aggregator for me. And last night I was loving it. Even today I still think, ooh, this is like FriendFeed again, and lots of nice, interesting conversations and people, you know, throwing up links and taking you elsewhere. And I mean, certainly I've used it today, and I think it's very different from Google Wave, but I've used it today and really liked it, whereas I used Google Wave and thought, I can see use cases, but not that often.
It feels with this arena like someone needs to create a website, and maybe this is where they're going with this open platform, where you create all your links to all the people, and then other services plug in all their elements. Yeah. So that, you know, something like Facebook obviously lives off of its plugged-in elements.
Yeah.
But if you have an open platform, it means that you only have to do that linking once and you're done.
Yeah.
There is a bit of an issue with this, though. And things like on these different services where people have said, you know, the kind of privacy issues where people have said, you know, I only want this kind of information shared with my friends. I don't want it shared with friends of friends, say on Facebook. But actually, you kind of use these other third-party services. I noticed it with TweetDeck. That, you know, it's got great Facebook integration, but I can post Facebook friends' status updates. You know, I can then tweet them, you know, and they may be people who didn't want that.
Yeah.
Anything going any further than that.
And, yeah, because they might just be thinking that that's private with my friends and only people on the website can see that.
Only with my friends in Facebook. But actually, all these things are it's getting much more blurred and things going.
I think so. I mean, and the problem is, I think we've touched on already. I mean, we've talked about how each one you've got to go and friend people, but they're all trying to grab the same market share. No, they want to become the one dominant thing. And I mean, it's interesting because, I mean, Facebook's already, I mean, it's, I guess, one of the most visited, or not, if the visited website, all your friends are already on it. Are people going to visit Google? Are you going to get people to connect to another profile? You know, like, have you guys got your Google profile up to date?
No.
Kind of.
Yeah,
I don't even know if I've got one.
And that's the thing. So without a Google profile, this is kind of a bit defunct at the moment.
This isn't gonna take over from the likes of Facebook. There's a whole load of ordinary people who use Facebook to email people, to play web games and all sorts of things. You know, And this just doesn't have quite the functionality yet. And
no.
It's like a lot of people think about Twitter, that they don't, if you're not really got a whole lot of folk that you're following, it doesn't really make sense.
No.
And you don't really get the point of it. So.
No. Might be a good time to roll into the fact that Facebook are rolling out an email service, or they're updating their messaging service. So it's actually going to be full-blown.
And that was the interesting news, that it was all this talk about Facebook rolling out an email service. It potentially could blow away Gmail just because of the market share they now have. If they could roll out a really, you know, simple web-based email platform, it would really, you know, really take a massive market share from Gmail.
Well, it seems like there is not just going to be a simple web-based thing. You can access it via, you know, Facebook,
yeah.
But they're also going to give you IMAP and POP access to it. So it's actually going to be a full-on.
Yeah, but I think they would have to, you know, to be treated as a serious contender. You would have. Yeah, there's just certain things you now need to offer. You know, so like great spam filtering would need to be there. You know, if you didn't have that from day one and you're getting loads of spam, just people would not use it.
Yeah. So it's
actually it's quite dangerous for Facebook, this, because really the reason people use their Facebook messaging is because there's no spam.
Yeah.
Because people can't get that unless they're your friends. They've got to be really careful with how they open that up, actually.
Yeah. But no, it's
and how much people rely on their emails. I mean, Gmail is a very reliable service, as far as I can tell. I've never had any serious outage that I've noticed.
I mean, there's been outages, because I know, and it's never really affected me, because I'm not a big Gmail user. But I guess if you're 100% in Gmail and getting, you know, 200, 300, 400 emails a day, then any outage is very serious.
I've been on Google Apps now probably getting on for a year, and I can't say that I've ever noticed anything particular, you know, that's meant I can't send and receive emails. So
yeah. No, it's pretty impressive. A couple of things I didn't like about Buzz or the Google profiles itself. The Google profile is very simple. You know, it doesn't look like a great page. It's all a bit kind of hacked together feeling. You know, it's almost like you could label it against that for some of Google, or for a lot of Google sites. They feel very simple and basic, you know, compared to other sites. And if you comment on somebody's conversation, they then send you regular email updates as more is added to it.
Is that something you can opt out of?
Not that I've found. Mm. That's a bit frustrating. So some people are already creating filters in Gmail to remove all these Buzz emails that are happening, and I'm guessing it will become an option. And if you don't like Buzz, there's an option right at the bottom of your Gmail page that you can say switch off Buzz, the same way you can switch off chat. So if you just want to, if you don't want these extra things that are starting to appear around Gmail, you can switch them off.
Mm.
But I've got to be honest, I was quite impressed. But then I'm a tart, so.
Well, no, it's good that, you know, like that they've given you the option of pulling in your Twitter feeds.
Yeah.
So, like you said, if you use Gmail a lot, then you can see your Twitter tweets from within the same interface.
Yeah.
But it does seem like it's all sort of cobbled together just to try getting on the act.
As I said, I really liked FriendFeed, and I don't think any of you guys used it. I got a lot of use out of it, and this feels very similar. And I'm hoping it's going to become as good, if not better, than FriendFeed, which Facebook bought.
As with all these social apps, there needs to be a certain number of people at a tipping point somewhere where it actually becomes a viable.
Well, already, thing. The conversations just yesterday and today have been. Massive compared to what FriendFeed was even doing, I didn't expect that. I thought it would be off to a fairly slow start, but it looks like it's massive.
That's the good thing about having a massive user base that are already
exactly. It's just like, by the way, here's a tool for you to go and use, go and play. and we won't know if it's going to be popular until, I guess, it's going to be a month, 2 months down the line. Are people still using it, or has it just become another one of these social networks that everybody signs up to, but you don't actually visit again for, you know, 2-3 weeks. Moving on, Google's to roll out ultra-high-speed fibre network to up to half a million US homes.
Yeah, well, I mean, okay, sorry, it's a US-focused thing, but they are now, they're expanding their own fibre network that they use between their data centres, and they're going to start supplying US homes for kind of what they're already spending on their broadband. They're going to offer them sort of 1 gigabit a second speeds, so it's pretty impressive, and they're talking about up to half a million homes. I just think they're taking over, aren't they? They really are controlling everything. They're controlling the front end, where, you know, with their operating systems. They're controlling the delivery and also the content. They are really a start to finish operation.
And I've got to be honest, I don't really. I know there's probably some security and privacy guys going, "Oh, big, big threat." And I don't really care at the moment.
I think Google still have the trust of people in general, don't they?
Yeah.
They've never.
I think it's even, for me, it's not even a trust thing. I just don't think about if it was all one service. You know, would I be concerned or worried?
They've always said that their core market is just sending out web adverts. And pretty much they've kept that. Anything else they've offered pretty much for free.
Well, and it's the adverts that are paying for all these alleged free things. So that's why, I guess, with things like Buzz, they've got to do it. They've got to attract people to websites. And as you said earlier, you've got to watch the adverts or else they're struggling. Moving on. UK video game sales drop. So this was a story last week, which was saying that over-the-counter, and I'll stress because it's been bolded up in our show notes, over-the-counter unit sale of console games are down 6% compared to 2008's figure. Handheld devices dropped a whopping 25%. And I think last year was basically the end of PS2, which I thought had ended 3 years ago, but there you go.
Same here.
62% drop in PlayStation 2 game sales.
Yeah, but, you know, I suppose a lot of that's to do with the fact that you could buy 8 PS2 games at a fiver compared to one PS3 or Xbox 360 game at 40 or 50 quid.
Yes.
So it's not really a wonder that the unit sales are down. And the revenues still seem to be quite healthy. So they, you know, we haven't heard much talk of all the games companies saying that their revenues are terribly down and their profits are
doing
terribly. So, you know, maybe they are selling a fewer games, but they're selling them at a higher cost. So
yep, I think it was a good point, well made. Because I just think it's basically some sales are down, but our revenues are fine.
We hear stories every week about, you know, some companies posting records and other companies saying that it's not been so good, and often about the same industry. And it's, I don't know what to listen to, really. I mean, I guess at the end of the day, are they still in you know, making games? And they are. I mean, part of the problem that the sales last year was about they didn't make any good games. There was nothing innovative last year, really.
No.
That's true. And this is over-the-counter sales as well, isn't it? I mean, when was the last time you bought an over-the-counter?
Via Steam recently than anything else.
So yeah.
And there's downloads, and then there's the online stores as well, where you get the things you get the things cheaper. So
yep. In fact, that's true. I don't think I've been to a game store in ages.
Yeah. And the one thing for me that stood out when they're talking about the handheld devices, the DS is getting, for me, fairly stale as a platform. The PSP Go, I thought, sucked. I know some people loved it. But I just think, you know, more and more people are looking at things like, you know, iPhones and other platforms like that for their mobile gaming.
You know, yeah, I think iPod with the Touch, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think with the DS and there, I think that's just like you and me. We're not really interested, but I think there are like a lot of people that are buying DS games.
I know. I just think there's not a lot of innovation there now. You know, there's only so many puzzle games that they can trip out every year and say, there's another crossword game. There's another, what is it, Professor Layton or whatever.
He's going to be out every year for the next 10, probably.
You know, I just think there's only so much you can really do where it's like, poor. Wii was probably down quite a bit last year as well. It just seemed a really flat year for Wii.
I mean, even with a PSP, my little nephew, you know, he loves his PSP more than his PS3. So I think they do have like markets, but it's like certain age groups. And
I think Nintendo is still the most healthy of the console manufacturers, aren't they? As far as every single sale they make, they pretty much in the profit, and they did that from launch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas all the others, they've only just started really making any profit on the consoles, if not still making a loss.
I think Nintendo hit the nail on the head, didn't they, with the sort of a social gaming machine and also the price point. And yeah, their graphics suck, but, you know, that's it's only people like us that are bothered about graphics.
But for any Wii game, I've never thought, oh, I need better graphics to make this anything fun.
Oh, I don't know.
I don't know. On a 50-inch plasma screen, you think, oh, that
there
sucks.
There are some very poor games.
You know, there's some of them you just think, oh, my neck. You know, and it's, I know, and I take the point, because the thing about the Wii, it was all about gameplay and how to interact with the, you know, the Wii controller and things like that. That was a new big thing for it.
But it was a novelty, wasn't it? Yeah. Sorry, it was a novelty, wasn't it? And you know, that's kind of proven. Everybody that wanted one has kind of got one now, and the sales are way down last year.
Yeah, and Wii Fit came out, and again, it spiked. But how many have just been collecting a nice layer of dust now?
I think games like this, like Wii Sports and all that's fine. You know, the graphics are sort of acceptable on them. But when they try to sort of like bring out like a, you know, like a more sort of a commercial game like Zelda or something like that, where the graphics, the machine just can't handle better graphics that are needed for that type of game, really.
One game that's coming out this year that promises to be quite different, going by the video that I saw today, is Glitch. So if you go to glitch.com, it's a massively multiplayer game playable via the browser.
Another one.
Yes.
Do you know, I mean, we were talking at the beginning whether we keep this story in, and the reason I did ask you to keep it in was because why the hell is this gaining so much buzz? Why?
I guess that one of the reasons is that one of the co-founders of Flickr launched a startup company, and I think it was the tail end of 2008, and it's been also secretive ever since, making quite key hires from the tech industry, but not revealing what it is they're doing.
And what they revealed was effectively a pixelated bunch of crap that runs through the web browser.
What they revealed to, when I watched it, it looked like it was going to be a bit of a niche game, offer something a bit different. And it looked very Monty Python-esque. So I don't know if we're going to see some humour. But I'm all for somebody trying to do something different.
Yeah, I mean, there's is it Dofus? That's a big online multiplayer game via Flash and stuff. And that does all the humour and the funny graphics and the quirky stuff. But it's more along the traditional lines. And I guess this is supposed to be something different, isn't it? Like, there's no fighting in it and stuff.
Yes.
But I just couldn't believe every single thing, and now us as well, are carrying stories on this thing. And it, for me, it doesn't look anything special.
And that might be the story.
I just like the way you said yes. It sounded like fed up.
Shut up. Right, some more, and this will get Chris in the mood, some more Apple hate.
Yeah, we've been having far too much Apple love for the couple of weeks I've been away. Let's get some balance back, please.
Well, just because you lost the iPad challenge. There's been another fix out for the 27-inch graphical problems. So the yellow screens, the flickery graphics. So production was halted, and I think this was about 2.5 weeks ago. So you couldn't buy a 27-inch iMac. There's been a new fix out which seems to have actually addressed the problems now. Another interesting part to the story was that you couldn't actually get a repair screen in Europe at all. So if you had a faulty machine, you were just waiting on a part. There was no promise of when. So Apple actually started offering a full refund plus 15% in the UK.
Gosh.
They then started doing the same in America as well. So they're basically saying, look, if you really are disgruntled and this isn't a great situation to be in, then we'll pay full whack for the money, and we'll give you 15% as an apology. Which I
as
thought
we've
was,
said before, it's not about having a problem; it's how you deal with it, and that's definitely a good way to deal with
it. Yeah, and I'm still pretty critical of it, because to me they've released a product, and there's just too many issues with it.
It wasn't.
I think it's a
the
lovely
fact they're
product.
Saying it's a problem with the LCD screen, because this was a new, well, kind of relatively new technology screen, wasn't it? That it was quite tricky in what it did. The fact that they're having to replace the actual screens, to me, is says that wasn't quite ready.
Yeah, and I don't know whether it's been an issue at manufacturing. I mean, there was a really interesting blog post where a guy's fixed his own screen and basically took it apart, and they reckoned it was just the actual template hole in the screen in place was just allowing it to be uneven. He sorted it himself, and he says he's now got a perfect screen, and he believed it was fairly simple to sort, but obviously he thought some sort of tooling issue was at the root cause. Now, they just have started shipping again. So I guess
do you find these posts?
Oh, you don't
you
want...
You must troll through a whole ton of rubbish to find
no.
these.
No, I use sites like FriendFeed and Google Buzz, and the stories come to me. I don't need to troll, they come to me. Anyway, I'll be I'm hoping to see that that's an
or
end
I adjusted
to
the matrix and it all fixed itself.
You're going to be so porn shortly. I'm going to love it. I'm hoping that that's it kind of resolved because I might buy one soon.
Well, I wish I'd bought one now, I tell you. If you're getting your money back and 15%, then you could walk back in and buy a new one.
And get 15% back again. You just keep doing it. Eventually you could afford an iPad.
This is an itch that's not going away for you, Ian, isn't it? It's going to happen.
Yeah,
It's nice that they're offering these refunds, but I think it's a reputation, isn't it? Because they're always supposed to be bringing out like quality products.
That's what I don't like.
So it's a sort of big dent in their reputation.
Because one of the little things for me, and I've said it a few times now, there's always this idea of don't buy a first generation brand new Apple product because it does have issues. And it's now that I'm 3-4 years into owning Apple stuff, it does happen quite often.
Yeah. Well, it does. But the thing is, I mean, Apple are fantastic at sorting those things out, even if they do it on the QT and don't really say what the issues are and things.
Yeah.
They are fantastic at sorting things out. Well, they are, at least if you live within driving distance or of an Apple store.
Indeed.
And don't want to talk to anyone about it.
Yes.
Anyway.
I'm actually disappointed. I've not been around for a few weeks, and I've noticed in the show notes we don't have a dedicated Apple section anymore.
Well, to be honest, it's 'cause you weren't around.
Oh, okay.
I'm feeling now that you're back in the mood that we'll see it back again.
Don't be so hasty.
Well, moving on, it's another Apple story. So Opera Mini is coming out next week for the iPhone.
Is it definitely coming out? Last I read was that it hadn't gone through the approval process, but they're going to demo it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, they're gonna reveal it, aren't they? They're gonna reveal it to all and sundry. And
I think they're going to show it in the hope that then Apple can't reject it.
Well, there are other browser choices in the App Store.
Okay. But don't they all use the... I think they all use the same technology underlying it, don't they? It's still Safari underneath it, even if they put a different front end on it.
Don't know. I was under impression there was a couple of things weren't.
Okay. I might have missed that step. But I'm sure I read the story today that they are just going to demo it, but that doesn't mean it's gone through the approval process.
No, which is fair enough. That probably makes sense. So is that the story done?
I think so.
Fantastic.
I don't think I put it in there, but that's what it is. It is what it is.
Now, moving on to one of Chris's most anticipated websites of the year, Seesaw. Go on, Chris.
Was it my most anticipated?
Well,
I think I just mentioned it.
You've bloody moaned about it enough. Go on.
I think because I mean it was a collaboration between BBC Channel 4 and Channel 5 to get all their
to get some off there.
Well, we'll come on to that. So it was. I thought it was for all of their on-demand content to be all put into one place. But as you just pointed out, Ian, that now that we've got access to the beta, actually, it's not a full catalogue of stuff at all. It's mostly catch-up stuff. Old stuff, isn't it, that you can now watch?
Yeah, I mean, some of the stuff was like a year, 2 year old. I thought it was pretty poor.
But I guess, as someone who likes buying box sets of, you know, old shows anyway, having them online so I can stream them instead of having to buy box sets seems like a good idea. Although having BBC shows that have got adverts in them is a bit painful, I think.
And the adverts were more than, like, even like if you go to 4OD, there was like, I think there was 2 or 3 extra adverts compared to 4OD.
Yeah, 4OD sort of has half the adverts that you have in the live show, it seems.
Yeah, normally. And Seesaw seemed to have double.
Seemed to put them all back.
Yeah.
So for me, this service will still come alive if it gets offered on things like, you know...
Go and see it, Xbox.
Yeah. Give me it. So any sort of delivery platform, so Boxy and things like that, if they can hook into this, it suddenly becomes much more interesting rather than having to log into the website.
So to go a bit of Rab C on you, Seesaw, more like hee-haw, What a load of piss.
I don't think it's as bad as that.
Oh, it was. Come on. It was terrible. Really poor.
I've never been so disappointed in a public beta ever, I don't think. Well, there was Google Wave, but it was pretty bad. It was pretty poor.
So, to show you how bad it is, I present TV Gorge. So, go to tvgorge.com, and that allows you to watch TV online. And it's not just any ordinary TV.
Except for it doesn't at the moment.
Why not?
Because they've taken all the...
Is it down?
Let's walk through the service. Sorry.
No. I feel like I need to check while you have rained in my parade. The
whole service works on the fact that what they say is, again, is they say, we don't actually have any video on our site. We just link to third parties. And the reason that they say that is because they are showing things that they do not have license to show.
Oh, absolutely. It's totally illegal.
But they're relying on other people's.
So TV Gorge was it pulled together a whole load of content. I guess the interesting thing for UK listeners is there was no geolocks in any of this stuff. So unlike, you know, TV.com and Hulu and TV Guide and TV Duck, which is all locked into America and you can't see anything, you could actually go and see all the kind of popular TV shows. And there's over 120 that were there. And at the time when I certainly put it up in the show notes, all the seasons for 24 were there. The only thing that was wrong with it, the quality was poor.
Yeah, and it's because it's linking into external services, basically.
Yeah, and you're right. I've just gone here now and it has changed.
Yeah,
it's lost a lot of its content.
I imagine they've had takedown orders.
Yes.
Because it was too, you know, it's one of these things that seemed too good to be true. I mean, can you imagine when we actually get these services?
Oh, no, is there? 24 is there.
It's I think a lot of it's depending on, it says if it's a off-site storage or something. I'm not sure.
There we go. There we go. TV Gorge is hard at work improving our indexing service and recompiling our database in order to serve you better. For a short period of time, brackets, days, we will not be displaying any third-party videos.
Because we're pooing ourselves because we've been sued.
However,
now,
below you'll find a list of external links for this episode that have been submitted by our users. And it's linked to things like share sites and mega video, all the kind of really illegal stuff. That's done. Ah, well, Seesaw is a fantastic...
The good times are over.
No, Seesaw is a fantastic website. I recommend that to everybody.
All right, see.
So, final news story this week. And I love this. Vodafone, I don't know if it was Thursday or Friday, but basically one of their employees accessed their Twitter account and put up the following post. Is fed up of dirty homos and is going after Beaver. So, it still makes me chuckle. So, in the space of 5 minutes, first of all, they deleted that post, but obviously a whole lot of people were retweeting it and also saying, Vodafone, we are disgusted. So they started sending out a whole load of apologies. And basically they were tweeting out, we're really sorry, a severe breach of rules by staff in our building, dealing with that internally. Please keep your faith in us. But it's just, to me, it was funny. B, it shows the danger of something like Twitter. If you don't watch, you know...
It's the number of people it reached in that couple of seconds.
Well, many people follow, you know, Vodafone, I guess. It'll be 100,000 or something stupid like that.
Now some spod can be the voice of Vodafone.
So basically he's now been bagged.
chopped and bagged.
Yeah, bagged means sacked, just in case that doesn't translate. And that was about it. And I just thought it was interesting because it just shows that the Vodafone and the Pope do have something in common. Anyway, moving on. Picks. We have some fantastic picks this week.
We've had a catastrophe of picks.
This is the best week for picks, I think, ever.
Well, they're always good if you can use one that we've had before.
It was better watching The Shield the second time than the first time through. You know, repeats are good.
Right. Okay.
First up, drum roll, Shaquille.
Oh. Okay.
Oh.
Right. Hopefully we've not done this one before. We might have mentioned it, but my pick for this week will be an iPhone app. Surprise, surprise. It's called TripIt. And basically what it is if you're a frequent flyer or a traveller, you can use this app to basically save all your itinerary details. And the way it works is you create your online account, download the app, and then if you like book a flight, and then if you get an email confirmation for that flight, you just forward that email on to plans@tripit.com. And then based on your email address that you send that from, which should be linked into your account, it will go and pull in all your flight details for you. And the same can be applied for your hotel bookings. And if you've got a car hire, you can do that as well. And then you go into your iPhone app and you can see the details of your trip all sort of laid out logically, starting from your flight to the time that you land at the airport, at your destination, pick up your car, go to a hotel, and then on your return journey, book out your, check out your hotel, return your car, then get back on the plane and land. Ian recommended this to me, so thanks to him for that. And I've now used it twice now, I think, and I think it's fantastic. I mean, what's really good about it is that it will save all your, your confirmation numbers, and even like your times of your flights, and it's free, obviously. But there's you can go for a TripIt Pro account, which is free for the first 30 days, but then after that you have to pay $69 per year. And what that gives you on top of the basic account is you gain itinerary monitoring by TripIt. So for example, if your flight changes for whatever reason, they can send you a mobile alert to say that your flight has been cancelled. And it can also track your frequent flyer points if you collect those. And there's a bunch of other things. You can have like what's called an inner circle, where you can share your trip details with them, say your colleagues if it's a business trip that you're going on, or if you're lucky enough to have an office assistant, you can share your trip details with that person as well.
So basically, Shaq, you want to share his with me? Seeing as I'm now his assistant.
So I think for something that's free, I think it's a pretty good app. And you know, and if you do travel a lot, I think it's a good way of keeping all your flight details together, really.
Yeah.
For all your trips. And so all your key numbers and flight numbers, they're all in one convenient location that you can access whenever you like.
You also get some cheesy stats. So at the end of the year, you can think, oh, blooming heck, I've just done 30,000 miles this year.
Yeah.
So that you can buy your carbon credits.
Yes. That's a great.
I mean, I think the most impressive thing for me was the support quite a lot of services. So like any sort of email that I've sent to it, I don't know how it does it, but it just sort of pulls in all the details just from a simple email.
Well, I think because they've been going for a few years now, if you go to their website, what they say is if you struggle with a particular, you know, if you send something in that struggles.
Yeah.
If you get in touch with them, and I guess they look at it and they just try to pick up as many different, you know, so they'll make sure that, you know, if it's an EasyJet email and it slightly changes, they'll just make sure that they're intelligently scanning it, and they'll make sure they pick up all the details properly.
You know, on the website there is like a big giant list of all the providers that they do support, and I had a quick scan through it, and you know, all your big flight providers, they're all in there, all the car hire companies, they're all in there, most of the hotels are in there. I did struggle today with my hotel booking, and that was because the details were as part of an attachment to the email, which it can't support. But all I had to do was open up the attachment, copy the details and put them in an email and forward that on, and it worked like a treat.
And one thing to bear in mind as well, that if it doesn't work, you can easily just go to the website and add it in manually.
Yeah.
So you aren't just, you know, restricted.
Yeah. And so far I haven't, you know, felt the need to upgrade to the Pro account. But I guess if you do travel a lot and your flights get delayed constantly, then it might be worth the extra money.
Mm.
Episode 12.
Episode 12?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, is that a repeat one? Well, it's good.
Well, there you go.
It's good to know that I guess that was my pick from episode 12. Mm-hmm. Just has the backing of one of our fellow podcasters.
It's still going.
It's still not going. Died yet. I'll do my picks now, which aren't repeats. And notice it's picks, not pick. The first is a Mac app called Movist, which is basically an alternative to VLC. So VLC is a cross-platform media player. Movist is Mac only. I think it's fairly new. I only found out about this a couple of weeks ago. But I've actually been very impressed. It plays basically everything I've tried to play has played first time. It's a really nice minimal, you know, UI around it, so it's not one of these really crappy looking Windows programs.
This is not iTunes.
And the other thing that's really good about it is it actually it's the playback speed, you know, it's just really good. So even when you compare it to you know, when you look at the how long it takes, like, you know, VLC or quick time to play like WMVs, Movist is a lot faster than either of those. So that's and it's free. It's one to keep your eye on. I certainly that's now sitting on my Mac Mini, and it just plays any file I throw at it.
So it's quite a tiny download.
Yeah,
Apple developers do things like that very well, don't they? They're good at stripping something down to its what you need it to be.
Yeah,
and they're good at giving you what you need instead of giving you stuff that you don't need. Basically,
it's difficult.
iTunes.
Well, it's a...
I say again.
Yeah, you're like a bloody broken record.
I know.
And the second pick, and I guess this, the only reason I'm doing this is that somebody on Twitter says, "Oh, I didn't know about this, and thanks for letting me know." Virtual Revolution, which is a four-part series on BBC Two. There's the first two parts have already been on, so I'm a bit late in letting folk know. But you can definitely catch up with them on iPlayer. And it's all about internet and the web. I've actually thought it's been pretty good. They're actually doing lots of interviews with the main players, which you don't often see. And I think it's just been, the first two have been excellent. They're hour-long episodes. The next one's on Saturday evening. And it's the other thing that's quite nice is the website as well. So they're actually putting up a whole load of the source video material, so you can actually, if you wanted to put together your own videos or mash it up, and they've got a nice kind of 3D interface to allow you to view little clips from each of the episodes as well. They've got Flickr feeds, they're on Twitter, they've got a blog. So
tell you, the BBC, they're on it, aren't they?
Right. I'm just really surprised with this because I only just found out about it, I guess, at the start of the year. I didn't have high hopes, but I've actually been really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it has been very good. I think the other thing about your picks, Ian, is you've got in the show notes there the MacStories.net.
Yes.
And that's a website I came across not that long ago. And it's got some really good stuff on it, actually. Some great links to lots of good content and things. And I think we'll be getting a few picks from there in future.
It's... And I don't know, I only found it recently as well, because it's not one of the big popular Mac websites.
No, it's not.
But it's actually pretty good.
Pretty good.
Moving on, Henry, your pick.
My pick's a cross-platform open source drawing package called Inkscape. Inkscape, if you like, is to Illustrator what the GIMP is to Photoshop. So... Are you laughing at?
Somebody chuckled.
Somebody chuckled when I said the GIMP is to Photoshop. There we go.
I think it was GIMP when you said
it. It was obviously GIMP, yeah. But
if you've sleeping.
And I was going to start doing the waking up bit, but I better
not. Oh, don't we go.
I've already done it. You can chop it in.
That's it. Lost this completely already, but there we go. But it does advanced... scalable vector graphics, which are these new kind of graphic format files, which are not hugely supported on web browsers and things, but you know, I'm just waiting for them to be really the next big thing, because if you get scalable scalable graphics where they don't go all pixely when you scale them up. It makes your graphics look a lot better.
The web's needed an open format for vector formats for a long time, and it just never they've never got their act together on it.
They never have really. So, but if you want to,
who's they?
I don't know the
Microsoft, Mozilla.
I guess Apple, anyone of importance, really, isn't it?
Yeah, Adobe.
So I'm going to blame Chris. Chris, you've never got your act together. Start up a standard and make it happen.
Well, there we go.
Oh, I'm trying to be. Oh, I'm sorry. Carry on. Oh, so the Hive is what I was trying to think of.
Right. Okay.
Oh. The Hive Mind.
Hive Mind. Anyway, Inkscape, mm-hmm. Great little drawing package, and you can't beat the price.
No, you can't.
Pick of the night, because it is actually a really good package.
And it's a unique pick that we haven't had before.
Finally, and Chris.
Yes.
Let's all hear about your picks. I'm sure we haven't heard about this before.
Yes, so all this jibing is due to the fact that I had put a pick into the show notes, which Ian has previously done. But I had added an extra one onto it, which is the pick I was going to put in was Handbrake, which is a great way of ripping your DVD movies, if you like, so you can watch them over your net or back them up.
Yeah, we know that. Go on with your pick, man.
So my pick is any DVD by Slysoft, which is the step you need to get rid of any copy protection off of your DVDs. It's PC only, but basically once it's up and running, it will strip any region or copy protection on it, and you can then use something useful like Handbrake to copy it onto your hard drive for backup and streaming of your media. Not sharing. Don't share. It's bad. €79, though, so it does cost money to have that facility, but it's worth it if you've got a lot of DVDs that you don't want to have to keep shoving in your disk drive all day.
Or you don't want to download from newsgroups.
But that's bad.
Is it?
Always.
So this is legal then, is it? The removing copy protection?
Not entirely, but I am able to. I'm legally allowed to make a backup.
Not legal at all.
Exactly. Yes. Oh, well, it kind of is because I've paid €79. Rubbish.
No,
you're a little pirate thief and you try to justify yourself.
You're obviously probably supporting organised crime by.
Yes, obviously every single DVD that's got this copy protection has the license agreement says you're not going to remove it, but you are legally allowed to make a backup, and there are moves to make, you know,
not,
be able to
not in the UK. You are not.
Oh, well, there you go.
If you live in America, you're perfectly free to make backups if you like, but we don't have that.
Thought we all had the one backup option.
I don't think so.
Well, I'll have to look it up.
That was a great set of picks. That's been our best so far. If you want to find out more about us, and after that, I don't know why, but you can visit our website at digitaloutbox.com. We'd love to hear from you. Tam, where are you? And
he's been a bit quiet, hasn't he?
What was that?
He's been a bit quiet recently.
I think it's since you moved up north.
Yeah.
Basically, you've left him all alone.
I'll need to send him some love.
Send us an email, info@digitaloutbox.com, or send us a Valentine's message on what is it called? Skype. That's the word.
Or send Ian a Valentine's message.
No. It's the podcast. It's a collective.
I don't want anybody's love.
I'd be very worried if any of our listeners actually sent us a Valentine's message to Skype to the podcast.
People love us.
Not that much, I hope.
No. And we're also on Twitter, Digital Outbox. Who will I pick on first? Shaquille.
Yeah, get out. I can't be bothered.
What are you on Twitter?
Go to my blog at shaquillename.com. And I'm on Twitter at Shaqen.
Fantastic. My blog is iand.net with new improved skin. And which just sounds totally wrong.
Epidermis.
I'm on Twitter as Sweeper. Henry.
Yeah, my blog is at talkrhubarb.com/wordpress, and I'm on Twitter as talkrhubarb.
And finally, little Chris.
And my blog is chrishutchinson.org.uk, and I'm on Twitter as cheesyuk.
Fantastic. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you again next week. Goodbye.
Bye bye.
Is that Chris's photo in that in the show notes?
What?
Is that no? Yeah, is that Fraser Spears guy? Yeah. I've never actually seen Chris's photo properly. It's always been from a funny angle.
Yeah, that, quite right too.
Yeah. Just so you,
that
just so you,
Fraser actually looks like my brother-in-law.
To be honest, it just looks like thin Chris. Oh. And it's taken from that kind of you can't tell I've got jowls angle. Jowls.
Arsehole.
Oh, I've already got the ending for this podcast.